Hello, this is Keith Renfro, and welcome to the Inner Healing Radio Show, where our goal is to provide you with different ways to achieve peace of mind from the inside out. I have a health tip for the day, which is breathing. You should breathe deeply because it provides more oxygen to the brain, causing you to think clearer and feel better. Today, our guest is Dr. Dionne Mahaffey, and she will talk to us today about female rivalry in the workplace. Dr. Mahaffey, I'm glad you were able to join us today on the Inner Healing Radio Show with your busy schedule.
I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Welcome. Dr. Mahaffey is a business psychologist, author, entrepreneur, technologist, professor, and a life and business strategies coach. She is the founding trustee of the Atlanta Charter of the Awesome Foundation for the Arts and Sciences. She has a 20-year plus experience as a technologist and has launched several startups during her first initiation. Dr. Dionne Mahaffey has been featured on and in Oprah Winfrey Show, CNN, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, as well as many other magazines, including Black Enterprise. She received her doctorate in psychology from the Colorado School of Professional Psychology at the University of the Rockies. Welcome again, Dr. Mahaffey.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit about how you got involved with the female rivalry in the workplace.
Well, you know, it was a research interest of mine because after graduating from college and working, you know, a full-time job while in graduate school, I quickly evolved into a management position. And when I started, you know, on the job, it was amazing to me that the women, as I was being introduced to some of the older women in the department, they sort of scoffed at me being in my role. And, you know, they made comments, oh, they're hiring managers out of high school. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I knew that I was young, but I'd graduated from college, and I had several years of industry experience under my belt, and, you know, I excelled at my internship, and I was in graduate school. But during the next 3 years at the company, I noticed that the men on my team were very supportive of my management role, and they offered to help me to advance in the organization. And by contrast, the women withheld their support. When I started, none of the women provided any guidance about the company's cultures and norms. And throughout my tenure there, none of them gave me words of encouragement if our team was under a deadline. None offered praise when I was recognized for accomplishing tasks. And I did everything, you know, that I could to cultivate a collegial atmosphere and to try and fit in and to make them understand that the success of the team was a shared honor. I showered my team with praise, and I used all the resources at my disposal to help them evolve professionally. But to no avail, I didn't receive any cooperation from the team, the women in particular, and I felt abandoned. When I left that company, my next position bore an even grander title, and I was hired as a senior director. And then I was just in my late 20s. At that point, I wasn't even 30. And 1 year into that role, a female employee approached me and said, "Thank you for making me feel empowered." And she admitted that she was upset when she learned that her new woman was a boss. You know, her new boss was a woman. I'm sorry. And the woman was a boss. But her new boss was a woman. She told me that, you know, I almost quit when I saw that they hired a woman, and I'm glad that I stayed. You're different. And I was shocked. I said, "How am I different?" And she said, "Well, you offered me advice, and you gave me direction, and you encouraged me to improve professionally, and I've never been provided with that amount of resources that you shared with me to help me grow." She was like, "I had female managers in the past, and we just don't do that for one another." So just to kind of wrap the story up, you know, as she continued, I recalled how at my last company, I felt deserted as a manager by my female subordinates. And my discussion with her was that she put a different spin on it, that she had experienced managers who don't help the women that are under their charge. But it was the reverse for me. And so in other organizational settings, I just started questioning. It became a question that I always asked women of how they engage with other women in the workplace. And the only phenomenon that I could uncover was that top-down, the queen bee approach of where they say women who are in leadership don't help one another. So I found that the sentiment was pervasive, that across the board people had stories, war stories of, you know, encountering women, and we all found it perplexing that we were not as supportive as one would think that we would be. And, you know, I wanted to study and research it.
Well, could you explain a little bit more about the queen bee syndrome?
Well, the queen bee syndrome, you know, is a phrase that was coined a very long time ago in psychological studies, where it's defined as a woman who's an alpha female who feels threatened by her younger or less experienced colleagues. You know, the queen bee, she's over the hive, and she preserves her power by obstructing their attempt to climb the corporate ladder. She does not offer mentoring, and she will not help them evolve professionally. So that's what the woman said when she learned she had a female manager. She just assumed that I was going to be a queen bee and that I wasn't going to be helpful. And I told her my experience was the reverse. I was in management willing to help women that worked for me, but they didn't want to offer me support. So, you know, yeah, the queen bee is something, and that's usually when people hear female rivalry in the workplace, they think about the queen bee syndrome, but it's really deeper than that.
Okay. Can you give me some more examples of the female rivalry in the workplace?
Well, I mean, there are countless examples in terms of how, you know, women engage with one another. It's an unfortunate, you know, situation, because what happens is that women recall personal experiences. Let's take it from a queen bee perspective, where they found that women in management and in leadership roles were just unwilling to assist them in their advancement. And then there are situations where teammates and peers, you know, experience sabotage, you know, where a woman in the workplace is deliberately trying to sabotage them from getting any recognition. And it could stem from, you know, different levels of competition. Who's the most popular amongst their peers, you know, that mean girl syndrome. Who's the most professionally competent? Who's more attractive? The level of education, you know. And so it sort of disrupts the workplace harmony that men sometimes enjoy, because women are so enmeshed in these emotional connections that it affects the opportunities to be more efficient and effective, you know, at work. So in my research, it went across racial lines. I spoke with white women who had problems with other white women, and black women that had problems with other black women, or white women that had problems with Hispanic women, or white women that had problems with black women, and vice versa. So it wasn't like, you know, just a racial issue where white and black women didn't get along, or Asian and Hispanic women didn't get along. It was across the board. It was intraracial as well as interracial, where women, just from a gender perspective, experienced aggression from other women, bullying from other women, and sort of a passive-aggressive approach to how we engage. Now, this is not the totality of our experiences at work, because women are natural nurturers, and there's still an expectation of nurturing and care, and women find, you know, phenomenal friendships at work, but there's also an inordinate amount of rivalry that women deal with and encounter, that it really just begs for a study to, you know, take place, and for a discussion to occur, so that we can really find essential ways to foster more harmony in the workplace.
Did you find in your research any particular attribute that caused women to have this rivalry or create a division between themselves?
Well, I think that, you know, there are agentic qualities that women have been taught to follow. And that's a leadership style that, you know, is assigned to people who demonstrate assertiveness and competitiveness. But those types of attributes are really more aligned to the way that men are. And so when a woman takes on, but that's where all the training comes from, because when you're taught to be a leader, you're given this prototype of what a leader is, and it's more an agentic quality that, you know, makes you masterful in your performance. But the underlying qualities of this type of, you know, leadership construct is masculinity. And so I think women don't take well to other women who are displaying masculine attributes. We can still be in the workplace and be women and be assertive and be effective, but it doesn't mean that we have to sort of operationalize our work and the output of it the way that men do.
Okay, very well. Tell our listeners how they might be able to get in touch with you.
Sure. They can find me on my coaching website. I am a coach, and lifepurposecoaching.com. And I do have a book that's coming out soon about sisterhood in the workplace. Lessonsinsisterhood.com is also another one of our websites. And my phone number is 877-427-2724.
Very well. We're going to take a break right quick, and we'll get back to you in a moment.
Okay. What are the next three questions I need to prepare? Because I'm kind of shooting from the hip.
Yeah, I understand. The next three would be how to resolve workplace conflict.
Okay.
And then why is it important to have a good old girl network?
Okay.
And then what companies or organizations can they do to improve the relationships between women in the workplace, and what are you doing to improve this effort?
Okay.
Okay, hold on a second here. Okay, are you ready?
Yep. Let's, instead of saying what can they do to resolve it, can you say what's the process that women go through when they encounter, what happens to women when they encounter workplace conflict?
Oh, you're talking about our very next question?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what? Say that again.
What happens? In your research, when the women recall their stories, how do they describe, how do they deal with the workplace conflict? Because I have a process cycle that I found and that they go through, and I'll just talk about that.
So we want to know what happens when they encounter this conflict?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're asking.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. 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 Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Welcome. Again, you are with Inner Healing Radio Show, and our guest today is Dr. Dion Mahaffey, and she is talking about female rivalry in the workplace. We, to recap a little bit, you did talk about how women didn't support you when you started off in the corporate world and in the workplace and had a feeling of abandonment. And you also talked about the idea of the queen bee syndrome, and gave us some examples about women in the workplace and their rivalry and how they manage to sabotage each other. So can you, at this time, tell us what happens when females encounter this conflict in the workplace?
Well, the women that I interviewed for my research, talked about their life experiences, and they really relived and recounted what they went through, and outside of the context and the particulars of how they, what the competition entailed, there's a process cycle that I found that, women sort of go through to get over and to help resolve it, if not amongst each other, just within themselves. So once they acknowledge that what is occurring is female rivalry and they know for sure, that it's gender-based, they do what I call driving the car, C-A-R, the first, the C is for coping. And it's a phase where they manage their emotions. They either repress their thoughts, they direct them internally, or they direct their energy other things that they're in their life. And instead of becoming, absorbed with work, they ignore the situation. And they just choose not to deal with the dilemma as a way to move immediately past it, And then there's another part of it. And from there, they can move directly to resolution. They can decide, I'm going to skip that A in the C-A-R in this car. I'm just going to move to resolution. I'm going to ignore it. I'm just going to cope with it. It is what it is, and I don't expect anything different. And then, but some of them don't go directly to the resolve phase. They go to A. So we've had C, now A is action. And that's where they become you know, they begin to internally negotiate a new perspective about the situation in themselves, and they attempt to reconcile. They may go to the woman and say, hey, look, this is going on between us, and I'm going to offer you an olive branch, you know, or they may file an organizational complaint. You know, they begin weighing their short-term and long-term goals. Sometimes they say, well, you know what, I may find another job, or they request, you know, that human resources takes a look at it. But there's observable actions that occur where, you know, they try to mitigate it through introspection and interactions to try and see what they can do to, you know, lessen the emotions that are heightened during this phase. And then after that, after coping, and then action, you know, in action, the transformation starts for them, and that's when they really put it in a place where they can deal with it, or they're accepting that it may not move to resolution. And if it does move to resolution, it doesn't really mean that the event has ended. It still could be occurring, but that phase is the outcome and effects of taking action, and it may include implementation of a change in perspective or just an implementation of their long-term goals. They may leave the company, short-term goals, leave the company, long-term goals, stay for a while and then leave. And during that phase, you know, they either initiate closure or they cycle through again. They go back up to coping with it and then going through the action phase and then right back down to resolution, because sometimes these types of interactions and encounters, especially when it's bullying, they don't just stop. It's a process that continues to occur unless something happens to remove these two from one another or the organization takes action.
Yeah, that's what I was hearing as you were speaking. I thought about this cycling, continuing to recycle through the problems and the way they're managed. Because a lot of people these days don't have the ability to change jobs that easily. So they end up having to continue to go through this process, as you know, as you just said, the bullying thing and how to deal with that. So in this, then, can you tell us why it's important to for women to have a good old girls network?
Well, I think that, you know, when you think about how men relate to one another at work, sometimes they are able to rise above the emotions of who they don't like and what he wore. Men don't really operate like that. They look at the performance outcomes, what's expected of us, what can we do to get the job done. I don't have to like you, you know, but we're going to get the job done. And men, you know, that good old boys network, it helps other men to evolve, you know, in the workplace, where someone in leadership will identify a golden child that they want to recreate another version of themselves and ensure that that person moves into leadership. And women don't have that. When you think about, you know, the recent report from the White House talking about women in America and indicators of social and economic well-being, it was an inexplicable fact that we're still not earning equal pay for equal work, 75 cents to the dollar. And so, you know, 5 decades after the second wave of feminism, with 72 million women in the workplace, there still isn't fair treatment of women in terms of compensation. Women need a good old girls network, because obviously the workplace is not working on our behalf. So women should try to operate with one another more courageously. In order to change that statistic, we need to coalesce in a way that we haven't seen since the second wave of feminism, is because we're in competition with one another for positions in the workplace is what churns up this rivalry. And so that's why there's little lack of solidarity. But when we realize that our unity is the key to overcoming, you know, the lack of opportunity for us, you can work together courageously to ensure that instead of thinking I'm going to protect my one seat at the table, I'm going to force the system to create 2 seats, 3 seats, 4 seats. That's what a good old girl network would do for women, the same thing that it has done for men.
And I can see that being effective, but I think about how women bond outside of the workplace, and when there's a problem, whether it's with their partner or family members, women tend to get together and talk, which is something men come up short on doing. So they share their problems and come up with some resolution. They kind of get into that CARS acronym of coping, action, and resolution that you talked about. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I can see that being very beneficial if they can take what they do outside of the job to bring it inside the job, then it would be more effective and productive in their lives as well as in the workplace. So
exactly.
Tell me then, what can companies or organizations do, as you see it, to improve the relationships between women in the workplace to reduce this rivalry?
Well, I think that, you know, there needs to be gender-based diversity programs and training and coaching that is particular to women. You know, companies, you know, have diversity programs, but it's not designed to focus on gender-specific needs. Now, they will give women training, but it's training based on, you know, the constructs, the organizational constructs that are assigned to men, you know, and there are intra-gender factors that need to be considered. Women need things that are tied to the way that we interact with one another, because your typical team building, look out for your teammate type of training that we have, the boilerplate training, does not address the fear that women have with coalescing with one another. You gave a perfect example. Women outside of the workplace don't feel threatened. So if a woman is having an issue, another woman doesn't feel threatened helping her resolve that issue because her natural nature as a nurturer and a problem solver kicks in. What can we do to solve this problem? But in the workplace, a woman feels like if I come up with a solution to the problem, my boss is not going to give me credit for it. She's going to take credit for it, and I won't get the bonus that I expected, or I won't get the raise that I expected. So we're not courageous in the workplace when it comes to engaging one another in a way that, you know, allows the team to evolve. So I think that companies need to recognize and not really sweep under the rug, you know, the type of specific training that, you know, women need. There's these, you know, what they call these, some of these training programs. There was a book called Pink Pumps to the C-Suite, you know, and those are the types of things that, you know, are, again, telling women how to be a manager like a man would be a manager. And there needs to be courses and training and diversity initiatives designed to train women on how to engage with one another the way that women need and should engage with one another to improve the company's performance and effectiveness.
I can see that this is a very in-depth subject matter and you're very versed on it. But in the minute or so that we have left, could you tell us what you're doing to help improve this particular effort?
Well, you know, I have my book coming out called Lessons in Sisterhood, and it really sort of chronicles the research and the narratives that I captured from the women that I interviewed is highlighted there, of course, with their anonymity being intact. And just with some lessons and sage advice that I received from women who have, you know, risen above the issues of rivalry, because across the board, women do like one another. We do get along. And so just these lessons that women who are, you know, of a certain age that have a certain amount of life experience, they're sharing, giving back in a way. Also working on trying to develop, you know, some mentoring and coaching programs that are particular to women. I do conflict resolution. I go into corporations and help them resolve workplace conflict amongst women. That's one of the niches that I satisfy. But I really want to develop coaching and mentoring programs that are specific to the needs of women in a way that would mitigate the rivalry before it starts.
Okay. Well, tell us, listeners, again, how they may get in contact with you and how they might be able to get a hold of your book.
Sure. They can go to Lessons in Sisterhood. The book is not out yet. It will be out in the coming months this year. Lessonsinsisterhood.com. They can also reach me from a coaching perspective if they're having some challenges as a woman and they need some assistance. LifePurposeCoaching.com or on my our toll-free line is 877-427-2724.
Thank you, Doctor. I appreciate you spending your time with us today. And to all our listeners, I hope they pick up that book because it sounds very in-depth and very beneficial. Like you said, 72 million women in the workplace. Again, thank you for coming on the show. And I'd like to leave everybody with an affirmation for the day, and that is, I easily and comfortably release that which I no longer need in life. Kind of goes along with your program there.
Sounds good. Thank you for having me.
Okay. All right, let me see if I can stop this.
Oh, your show is 30 minutes?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm trying to think. Where did I?
I think you pressed star 9 again.
I'm trying to find it because I got off of it because I was using my timer.
Oh, okay. So, well, you know, I just hung up because they hear us talking, but they'll edit all of it out.
Okay, so, here we go. Got it. Okay, maybe that stopped you. Okay.
Okay.
So, let me, since I got you online, because I've never done this, how do I upload it? Where do I go to?
Download it. If you're on the free conference HD line, hold on one second, because my son just came in the house. I'm glad we finished, because I told you he's going to come here with some noise.
Yeah.
Now, Sarah, feed Goldie. Ashanti didn't do it. Feed her and take her out. Go. Okay. He and the dog, both of them. Okay. Take her out, son, okay? All right. All right. I have to log in. It was something on the menu for, are you on the website?
No, I'm not on the website. Let me see if I can pull it.
Yeah, it's on the website.
Yeah, okay. I just
it's
had
on the
to,
free.
I had to get another iPad today, so everything is not in there. Free.
I think it's freeconferencecallhd.com.
Yeah. Free conference call. Let's do it this way.
Ask your sister. She knows how to do it. Go put
okay,
the oven on 350, and then your sister will help you with that. Okay, son? I'll be down there in a second.
Okay. That's making me download something. So when I go on there, because that's not working either. Hold
yeah,
on.
It's free conference call HD. And then you log in.
Okay. And then what?
When you're logged in, let me see. I'm going to log in. There
because
is.
I'm on an iPad, and it won't let me do it on the iPad for whatever reason.
You can't. You're not going to be able to do it on the iPad because you have to download it.
Yeah, I see that. So I'm just going to copy what you're telling me, and then I'll do it.
Yeah, it's easy. Once you log in, it's going to show you control panel. There's a tab called History and Recordings.
Okay.
And you click on that, and
okay.
You'll see it says download to your computer. You'll see it's going to say details, the date and time of the call, and you can click on download.
Okay. And it downloads it to my computer?
Uh-huh. And then you just upload that to Basecamp.
Okay. Okay. So I put it on the computer first and then put it on Basecamp.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. No problem there. Okay.
Yeah, because, so as soon as you log in on freeconferencecallhd.com, it's going to have tabs. It's going to say control panel. Then it'll have conference view, history and recordings, preferences, help, contact us, my account. You click on history and recordings. And then to your far right, just before the delete trash can icon, there's a download icon. And when you click on that, it's going to save it to your computer.
Okay. Okay. I'll get that.
Yep. That is it.
All right. Thank you very much for the interview and the patience to work with me on this.
Oh, no, thank you, because it was just a busy weekend, so I'm glad that we were both flexible with one another so we can get this done.
Yeah, me too. So, will I see you there when I come down?
Uh-huh, yes, I'll be there. I'm actually going to be there Tuesday night just to go and meet everyone, and then I will be there all day Wednesday.
Yeah, I think we
and
got
then
the same
all day. Thursday, what, no, we don't have all day Thursday. We just have all day Wednesday.
Yeah. Yeah, all day Wednesday, part of Thursday. Well, I'm doing the TV part, too, so I've got
Yeah, me, too. I'm doing that on Thursday as well. I have to record my four starting at noon, I think, on Thursday.
Yeah. I'm not sure what time I have to look at it again, but I guess I'm after you or before you, one of the two.
Mm-hmm. So. Who are you interviewing for that?
I don't know yet.
Okay. She booked them.
She hasn't given me that information. She just gave me the script. While we were sitting here talking, she was sending them to me.
Okay. Good.
Questions? Okay.
Okay, so I will see you then.
All right, take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.